For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us. I've got a really fun CarCast episode for you today. We've tapped into our buddy Tanner Faust. He's going to tell us everything about his new video, Quantum Drift, as well as making movies and all kinds of fun stuff. So Tanner's going to be with us for the whole show, and it's going to be fantastic. Before we start, I'm going to tell you guys about our friends at Geico. Maybe you own a home or rent a home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing too, because we already have so much to do around the home already, especially now that we're here, we're in isolation, we've got nothing to do except be at home, do home stuff. Well, go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and Bill Goldberg is he's on assignment with WWE for today, and I guess for the couple of days. We'll get some updates on that when he gets back. But I'm happy to say we've got our old buddy Tanner Faust. I'd say in the studio, but unfortunately not in this studio. We've got him in his car. He found some solitude in his car.
And, not driving, just sitting here.
Right, not driving, sitting in the car. We're just scrambling to find a quiet place where we can record some shows and try out this fancy technology that that Chris has got us on. Chris, I don't know where you are. I don't know, Long Beach or something? I have no idea.
I am in Long Beach, yeah.
But Chris is around somewhere. I just can't see him on my screen for some reason.
I don't want to distract you, so I remove my video and I'm not talking.
Okay, well then I couldn't hear you anyway. Anyway, there's going to be a few little bumps and bruises in this podcast because of us trying to do this remotely, but bear with us, and we're going to try to do a good show for you guys. Before we get started, I want to tell you guys about our friends at Dodge. With Dodge Power Dollars, you know, with for every horsepower of a new Dodge vehicle that you purchase, you'll get $10 off. So put out in a 19 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack, and you just got $4,580 off. There you go, our friends at Dodge. I asked Tanner to come in and be on the show because his latest video, I guess part two of Quantum Drift, is out. It's on YouTube. It's on Tanner's channel. I'm sure it's all over his social media as well. If you guys haven't seen it, you're going to have to watch it. You're going to have to check it out, certainly because we're going to be talking about it. But there's a Quantum Drift 1. It's been a few years, right? Like maybe 20... When'd you do that one? 2016?
That sounds about right. Yeah, it could have been four years. And it was, that one was really successful and was great fun to do. But what kind of inspired that was, you remember the show Quantum Leap. I've talked about that. I mean, there's a certain amount of us that remember that show. And, you know, this was a guy who jumped around from person, you know, body to body, always trying to find himself back in his own body. For a car video, I love doing the car videos, and I love that as a racer, you know, you've got to create content, you got to do some fun stuff and make driving fun in content. That's one of the great parts of the job. But I just wanted to drive more than one car. So this was a video that allowed you to drive five, six different cars or so in the same video. and have some sort of story that made sense on why you would be jumping from car to car. So in the first Quantum video, it was steering wheel was what just suddenly magically transported you from car to car. And that was actually a big pain to get yellow steering wheels for every car. So we ended up this time having that weird juju suddenly come into the gloves. And so the gloves turn yellow. It's a lot easier to go do a bunch of different stuff, go into other people's bodies. Heavy D we went into. We went into a pilot friend of mine and his aerobatic plane, Skydiver. It's for fun. The video is for fun. And especially now it's a good time to do a fun video. It's just got a lighthearted kind of attitude to it. And it was great fun making it.
You know, you talk about the premise for it, which I thought was fun. You're right. It's just meant to be lighthearted and fun and something kind of exciting for people to watch. The idea of, you know, the magic gloves and has you jump from time to time. Of course, I thought it was kind of funny because any of the generation of people that are sort of watching these videos on YouTube right now probably have no idea what Quantum Leap is.
No, I'm reluctant to even say.
It's a little bit of a nod
Leap,
to. It's a little bit of a nod to guys our age, I think. I think that was even, you know, we were kids when that show was on. So, you know, we're not that old, but, I think we're outgrowing the YouTube audience in a sense that as far as who's the most active on that platform.
Well, you notice all the 80s kind of graphics and everything.
Yeah. You had to wear a lot of lipstick in this video.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I was more nervous about launching this video than for sure any other video, but even some race weekends I haven't been this nervous just because you just don't know how people are going to take that. There's at some point I jump into three different women's bodies. One of them's like an old lady, one of them's like a teenager, another one's I don't know how old, but there's it's a tricky. I wasn't exactly sure how that would come off. It's all part of the fun. But then as we were making it, it seemed, oh yeah, this will be so funny. And then, you know, I'll be like in a robe and I'll be a girl and I'll look in the mirror and be like, oh my gosh. And then when you're actually about to put the video out there, like, I don't know if, you know, the old corporate sponsors are going to be cool with this and, you know, that kind of stuff. And didn't want to offend anybody, but I'm so happy that virtually every comment I've read has been super positive and people got it. I was really worried that people wouldn't get that. It's for fun. And that, there's cool. Yeah. We've got Johnny PV shooting this amazing footage of the Beetle through this old abandoned like warehouse. And that used to be an automotive manufacturing plant and drift footage with Johnny PV. And so some amazing footage, but fundamentally it should be a little bit comedic and just a bit on the fun side. And so I'm super stoked that people took it that way.
Yeah. I thought it came out great. Tell us about what it was like filming some of the car segments. Obviously the jumping around and dressing up in the different costumes and stuff is fun. And I get when you show up on set and you're like, oh, today's the day you're going to put a dress on and a robe and put some lipstick on. But when it gets done and it's edited, it's very fast and it's very fluent and it works out great. Obviously the car stuff is what you're most excited about. How does that discussion start? Do you sit down with the production company and you pitch the car ideas or do they? I mean, obviously you're going to have some input on it, on what they do.
There are a certain amount of assets that we have kind of at our disposal or that we could access. We were rallycross racing with the Beetle and this is just a beast of a car that is kind of super multi-talented, 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds, has 14 inches of shock travel, can do 180 foot jumps in the race and also pull 2 G's on the pavement. It's just a multi-talented car. So there's always a desire to plug that into weird places. The drift car is another asset that's there, Polaris Razors, a host of cars that I get to play with a lot were there, but this time we wanted to do other stuff like with airplanes, didn't fly myself, If we do this again, I have a pilot's license and I'd like to get the skills to do what Tommy Sewell did in that video, who was flying that plane. So that for Quantum Drift 3, if we ever get to make one of those, then I'll be sure to get skilled up on aerobatic flying. But so that's, it starts out with a conversation of, look, we could do this. What's a cool location nobody shot at before? What's a little gag that we've always wanted to do? And instead of making it all about a big stunt in the video, which a lot of these car videos get specific on a couple core stunts, I really wanted to push it more to the fun factor and kind of the lightheartedness that you see in the video, and spend some of the budget on getting, you know, actors and other people involved to, try to liven it up and do something that car videos don't normally do.
What was the most fun part of the video, and then what was the most difficult part?
The most difficult part of the video was one of the girl scenes was looking at myself in the mirror with all that makeup on, just caked. And just thinking, what like steps in my life lined up to put me right here, right now in this bathroom. There were some definitely awkward moments, but I think the most fun was, grid life. If you see the drift taxi, I'm taking people for rides actually in that video. And drifting that Passat, that 900 horsepower Passat around Road Atlanta, grid life. It's just a cool thing. It's very loose. It's still one of those driving events that's probably going away, where you just have, there's hardly any rules really. And so you could drift the whole track at Road Atlanta on the Sunday. It was 130 mile entry speed. And it just was, it's just out of this world. Love to do it every weekend.
How many people do you take in the car at a time? Do you fill it up? You grab three passengers in the taxi?
Yeah, we got four seats on there. We got four race seats. We extended the roll cage after that car was used in competition. We extended the roll cage to the back, put the nitrous bottle in the back. And so we have four seats, barf bags for every seat. And then you just grip it and rip it. And it's like, it's so fun. And the car's so loud. I mean, everybody's got earplugs. Everybody's screaming, having a good time. It's actually, I love competition and I love racing and I love the feeling of winning and fighting for it. But man, giving people rides in the drift car at speed and you're not just talking about it and seeing it in a video, but having them in the car it's been one of the highlights for sure the last 15, 20 years. So I really love having that thing.
I imagine it would be exciting. Everybody's reaction is going to be different. And even, occasionally over here, we get to just take a car out on a track and have some fun with it. But anytime somebody says, hey man, you want to ride shotgun on something? I'm in. I just say yes. If it's, anybody I was just at like Dodger Stadium and Ken Block was running around the parking lot in some car and he's like, let's go. I'm like, yeah, I'm going. I'm just going. It's fun. It's fun to do that. And everybody's reaction is going to be kind of weird and different and loud.
There's two different you're on one side of the fence or the other. Like you're either the one who's like, yeah, I want to check it out. And you're watching the feet, you're watching the steering wheel. Like, how do I do that? And this is so fun. And maybe you're just rocking out to some music or whatever, just like enjoying it. Or you're the other side of the fence where if you literally see a text on your phone while somebody else is driving, you get motion sick. You can't stand being in the passenger seat. And I'm the latter. I'll be honest. I'm a terrible passenger. I get sick in an Uber. If I try to do emails in an Uber, I'm done.
What's funny is I'm not too different in that. If I'm sitting in the back of an Uber and I'm going through my phone, I get a little queasy. And if I'm riding with somebody around town, I get a little nervous about their driving. I'm not the best shotgun driver, but when it's on a track with somebody that knows what they're doing,
yes.
I'm fine. Like, I don't even want to hold on. I just want to flop around in the seat with my seatbelt on because now it's a roller coaster ride to me. There's a level of trust, not just trust in the driver, but I don't have to worry about the other people on the roads around me. Like if I'm going for a ride around the neighborhood I got to worry about everybody else, but on the track,
totally with you.
Super
and you
easy.
Have roll cage. You get in there. You're clicking all this stuff. You got the harnesses and the suit and the roll cage. And yeah, you're right. It's a different story when you're on a track.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting down next to somebody who's like, all right, he's driven this faster, and it's gonna hurt him a lot more than me if he crashes this thing and has to, you know, fix it.
Yeah.
I'm with you. On a track, it is a different story. There's something about an Uber that just scares the crap out of me.
Every time, even just on something small, every time I go to the SEMA show, somebody invites me out. I'm always very fortunate. The guys at Roush or Superformance are like, come in the Raptor or get in the Mustang or come get in one of the Cobras. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. I've done it every year. And I'm like, I'm still in. Like, I'm going to do it. It's fun to do. I know you've got some other things going on. You started a podcast?
We did. We it's like an, it was a bit of an experiment, and it's, I mean, we're not aiming to levels of you guys with CarCast and with Adam's podcast, which I'm a big fan of, by the way. But we it's Speedy, Beardy, and the Mole with Rutledge, Adam, and I. And I'm obviously Beardy in that trio, but there's we just hadn't hung out in a long time. You know, it's a weird thing about a TV show. We did 750 days of shooting in 6 years and we're hanging out, you know, over 150 days a year and having a great time and enjoying it, but really just becoming pretty good friends. And then, I mean, I shouldn't say pretty good. Rutledge would kill me if I said that, but super good friends, besties. And then, you know, you're super busy and you get busy doing other stuff and you're like, you know what, we should hang out some more. And it's like, well, if we're gonna hang out, we should, you know, do this and that. And we heard from a lot of people about Top Gear this and Top Gear that. And so it's not a show that we're going to do again, but I guess Rutledge had some interaction with some people in the office. Some of the girls that did the show The Office, they did like a watch along podcast. So that's what this is you get the shows out. So we hear from so many people that they have them either saved or they watch them on Hulu or whatever.
Yeah.
And we do a countdown of 3, 2, 1 play. And and you don't have to obviously watch along with it. You can just listen to the podcast or watch the video cast, but 3, 2, 1 play. And then if they're on the same page, then we're watching it with them. And it's just a behind the scenes thing. We're usually having a cocktail, we're relaxed, having a good time. And it's great to have the three of us together. Again, it's great to hang out with those guys again. And that's really what started it, was just wanting to hang out again, but it's a lot of fun. So Speedy, Beardy, and the Mole is what it is. We've just done 3 episodes and we'll just keep it going.
And you guys are watching Top Gear episodes.
Yeah, we're
Top
watching episodes that we've done and then talking behind the scenes of, oh my gosh, do you remember this? Your pants ripped here and it took us a day to go find you a replacement of this or that or whatever. You know how it is. There's so many things that are left on the cutting room floor. And a lot of people ask so many questions about that. We're like, well, fine, well, let's just get out there and you know, tell all the behind the scenes stories and we can do it in this format. It's a great thing about the podcast. And if they can watch along, then they can actually be at the same spot of the conversation with us. Otherwise they can still listen along. And I think it's still a lot of fun.
I think it's a great concept. It's sort of like DVD commentary for what you guys have been doing.
Mystery Theater 2000.
That's what I was just going to say. Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah,
MST3K. And I loved that show. And I think between that and Quantum Leap, we just dated ourselves way too much now.
Oh my gosh.
MST3K was so much fun. And for you guys to do sort of a modern take on that, first of all, the three of you guys together, is fantastic. I don't know how often you guys are going to be able to get together to do this. Rut's on the other side of the world, it seems like.
Yeah, we can do 3 or 4 at a time. So it's not too bad. You know, you just sit down there. They're 44 minute shows because that's, you know, what the show
yeah.
is. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
So you guys get together mostly probably in LA because two thirds of you guys is here. Does Rut cook for you when he gets here, or does he try to poison you subtly, or how does that work?
So he stayed at my house for a couple of days. This last one we shot it at my house, and he stayed there for a couple. He worked a cooking show, maybe two. Yeah. And next thing you know, he's like in the freaking kitchen, fire everywhere.
Oh yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, no, just pour a little of this. I'll just take a little sprinkle of that. I mean, it's like an explosion going off in the kitchen. I will say, whatever he cooked, I don't remember what it was or what it was called, but it was very good, delicious. He's actually got quite a good diet going on, a healthy diet, and it was delicious. So I can't knock him too bad. So the cooking show's paid off. But yes, right. Rut cooks. I make the drinks, and Adam just cracks some jokes. So it's a pretty good combination.
Well, it works out good. If you've got some time to still stick with us, I want to ask you about some movie stuff, but up to
Let's
you.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, I'm gonna hit the Dodge guys one more time because they're the reason why we get to do this stuff. So visit your local Dodge dealer where they bring you performance, technology, and great deals. There's never been a better time right now because Dodge is offering Power Dollars. And with Power Dollars, you get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. Every 2019 Dodge Charger, every 2019 Dodge Challenger, it doesn't matter. This means you could pull away in a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack with 485 horsepower and receive an almost $5,000 cash allowance. So if you get more power, you get more off. It's that simple. So hurry into your local Dodge dealer today, or don't go to the dealer. Just give them a call because you're not allowed out of your house, and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. The fans that follow you, and some that are new, getting up to speed, they know that you're a racer. They know that you've hosted a number of different TV shows. You've got your videos out, like this Quantum Drift. But some of them may not know the huge resume of movies that you work on as a driver, as a professional driver, a stunt driver, all the kind of the fun things. I'm not sure. Maybe one of the first movies was it Dukes of Hazzard?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, 2005.
And I maybe something kind of got under your skin. You're like, I like this too, and then went on to go do some incredible movies.
Yeah, it really formed kind of a little bit of a tripod in my business world, with racing and hosting and stunts, and they all sort of fed each other. You know, the racing, you know, the directors always wanted the racer to do the driving. Doing the TV hosting helped me raise sponsorship to do the racing. And in some ways, doing the movies is a little bit of a resume thing, but it's so fun. You get to crash on purpose. And Dukes, I grew up Dukes of Hazzard, dated again. Third, that's the last. Three's a charm. Last time we're dating. Yeah. 99 with balloons. I sure could use a balloon right now. There's the Dukes of Hazzard, that was a show that I could stay up late to watch. My parents would let me stay up and watch that Wednesday nights or whatever, right after $6 million net. Man, that's number four.
Oh, there she is.
Jeez. But it was epic watching those two dirt rooster tails rip around through the forest. I just loved that. I think for a lot of us that are in the car industry as adults, Dukes of Hazzard, we owe a lot to that show. So to do that movie was a great opportunity, and I did get to drive the Gen Relief for the first part of the movie. Most of it was Reese Millen, and I was a Billy Prickett, who was the bad guy.
Yeah.
The movies are fascinating. It's a fascinating industry, and stunts specifically is super fascinating. It's really a family business. You don't have agents, you don't have managers. It's word of mouth, and there's people hustling. Like when you go to set, there's people that show up at lunch with a resume and talk to the stunt coordinator, and the stunt coordinator gives them time. You don't brush those people off. That's part of the industry. And I have a huge amount of respect for not just the industry, but the stunt people. You know, they're like a one-stop shop where the same dude can fight, martial artist. He's a gymnast, skydiver, scuba diver, can light himself on fire, jump off a building, and do some pretty decent driving. Luckily, doing more technical driving is a really expensive thing to train. A racer really has an advantage in that. And so the movie industry around that time, Dukes of Hazzard, started to bring racers in on some movies just to do some certain gags. And yeah, I've loved it.
For those that are out there, because we get questions a lot of times. I'm sure you get this too. Hey, Tanner, what does it take to get into racing? How do I get sponsors? How do I learn how? Even on our end, people are like, hey, how do I get into podcasting or automotive journalism or whatever? Although I think we're more on the entertainment side than the journalism side.
What about this is just as valid as any other news you can get. Just kidding.
What about getting into stunt work or stunt driving? First of all, is there any money in it? Is there a real career there, or is it really just a passion driven thing?
There's a good living to be made in stunt driving. I do get asked the question a lot about how to get involved, and I hate to be a pessimist with people. I like to be optimistic and follow your dream kind of stuff. The end of the day, when you look at the stats, it's very, very difficult. And if you don't know somebody in the industry or like have a family relationship to somebody high up in the industry, it is very, very difficult. So I always talk about on the driving side, I always thought drifting was a good place to go because you develop basically stunt driving skills. But that's very expensive. And I did a show a while ago called, it was a show with Ford actually. And we essentially took people off the street, but they auditioned on videos into teams and narrowed it down to one driver, and then they won a car. And one guy that was on my team was one of the many that I talked to about getting.
He was so upset. He hit a cone in the final race and he lost. And he was so upset. And he's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be there. And I worked a commercial about 3 months ago. And sure enough, he was one of the drivers on the commercial. And it was 15 years later. And we talked, and he went as a mechanic, which is something I did on a race team. I mean, swept the floors. He was bugging a stunt coordinator until finally they brought him on and at least let him show what he could do. He learned stunts. He learned gymnastics. He learned how to do all the actual stunt stuff to earn some respect in the industry to get hired. And he's doing it, making a good living at it. So it's sometimes people want the short, easy route, and that's never really going to be the case. But if they're willing to put the grind in and start the hard bottom rung, then yeah, I think it's worthwhile, and there are a lot of people making a really good living doing it.
You know, certainly anything that's super competitive like this, you think of things like acting and sports, you know, being a stunt driver or a stunt performer or anything is very similar. There's not a lot of jobs out there. There's a lot of people that want the jobs. So it's kind of tough to get into. I want to run through a few of these. I want to make sure we still got you there.
I still have you. It's just making an adjustment. Okay. Here, it looks like.
All right. Talk about some of the movies you've been on. You've worked on The Bourne Ultimatum, Fast and Furious, Iron Man 2, Bourne Legacy, Need for Speed, Straight Out of Compton. I didn't know there was a lot of drivers in that movie, but sure. Hitman Agent 47. I liked that one. Hobbs and Shaw. We all love Hobbs and Shaw. Chris Morgan, who's the writer and producer of that, is a friend of the family, if you will. He's good friends with Adam Carolla, and got to spend some time with Chris Morgan. The Art of Racing in the Rain, which is good. Ad Astra, and most recently, Ford v Ferrari and Westworld, the TV show, which is interesting. Tell us about working on a little bit of Ford v Ferrari. And you, looking at your resume, by the way, all the Fast and Furious movies and Ford v Ferrari and stuff, there's another guy out there that you might be working with, a good buddy of mine named Jeremy Fry. I don't know if you had a chance
to Jeremy
work with
well.
Jeremy. He's a sweet guy. And he's a stunt driver as well. He's done, he did quite a bit of driving, I believe,
Baby Driver.
What am I thinking of? Baby Driver. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he did.
It seems like it's a small world.
Yeah, Fry was one of those guys that when, let's see, I think I first met him maybe on Tokyo Drift, and he wasn't doing driving so much there. I can't remember the very first movie where we met him, but he was one of the stunt guys who was like, oh my gosh, this drifting stuff is super fun. Went out and bought a drift car, and then he was calling me at least three times a month. I think he lived up near the track, Willow Springs, and saying that he was headed to the track, come on up. And so he practiced and practiced and practiced, and he put the time into it, just like the martial arts guys and, the skydivers put their practice time into it, into their specialty. I mean, he did it the hard way. And so he deserves every accolade he gets behind the wheel. And he's a very, very, very good driver. For not coming from a racing background, he's, I think, one of the best. And he is and he's done some amazing movies. But coming from a stunt background, he's also very good at coordinating and understanding what needs to be done and how things need to be communicated on set. So he's got a long career ahead of him, and I love working with him. I've had the pleasure of working with him a lot, including on Hobbs and Shaw.
It's interesting that you said that, because as sort of you were explaining, stunt driving in particular, you can come from your background, a well-versed racing background, and kind of, dip your toe into the stunt world and create some demand for yourself based on your ability. And then guys like Jeremy Fry wanted to get into stunt the whole time and almost found a niche with driving, but of course does a lot of other stuff as well, like you said, being a stunt coordinator. But he went the film and entertainment route to get to where he, to the stunt driving end game, whereas yours was always in racing.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a unique pathway. I think any way you can get there is good. I don't know if there's a prescribed route, I guess is what we're getting to, but yeah, love working with Fry. Those movies were, some of the bigger ones actually aren't the most fun, I'll say. when there's a huge budget, they've got the budget to just work up to a giant crash. And it's usually those big budgets, it seems like the driving isn't the story. They have big actors, and so they're telling the story with the acting. But when you get to like the Tokyo Drift, which wasn't a huge budget for the Fast and Furious franchise, there's one that may not be on there called Red Dawn, which was the Patrick Swayze movie. That Red Dawn was one of the most fun movies I ever worked on, and it was just sliding through neighborhoods and crashing through fences and jumping through city parks and stuff. Just, you remember how all the paratroopers are coming down as whatever country invades. This one I was doubling Chris Hemsworth, and it was the hair and makeup guy almost quit, actually, when he saw that I was going to be Hemsworth's driver. But I don't know why. I never did get an answer why. But it was a super fun movie, and, 20 to 30 million, maybe 40 million, which in movie terms is pretty small. And, Dukes of Hazzard was pretty small budget. So sometimes those where they want to save the car and the driving is part of the acting is the most fun. And those are the days you walk away from, just pinching yourself because you're just kind of having a blast on set.
What is it on the set that makes it fun? Is it the driving that they ask you to do? Is it the tasks and stuff specifically? Like when they say, oh, you're going to be drifting through, you got a little bit of freedom here, you can go through this neighborhood and just slide back and forth? Or is it sort of the formality or lack of formality of the people putting the movie together? Do the stunt coordinators and the director say, I need this exactly? Or do they say, you got a little bit of freedom here to do something?
I think the challenge of let's do this exactly is always a little bit satisfying, especially if you have the tool to do the job. Part of the stunt driving world is sometimes you're given a 1960s Mustang with six turns lock to lock. And you're supposed to be monging down a street, there's a challenge with the hardware, but I remember Tokyo Drift. There was a scene where Samuel Hubinette was driving the other car. He was in the orange Veilside RX-7. I was in the DK's 350Z. We were shooting in downtown LA, supposed to be in Tokyo, but they had, you know, signs up so it looked like Tokyo. And there was a scene where at some point DK passes Han, I think was the one, the character driving the Veilside orange car. And then he's supposed to drift sideways for like a city block and a half, just at 90 degrees to his direction, which, and shooting out of his window kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, if you came from Fast and the Furious 2, which was a lot of CGI, I could see how they got there. Just thinking they would fill it in and make it happen. But we shot that movie like really practically. So we had to kind of come up with this move where I would drift in front and to the side of Samuel and then spin a 180 and then back up, throw it in reverse really quick and back up, and we'd be nose to nose and then stick the arm out and shoot him that way. And so that was the first time I'd ever been asked a question on set.
Really. Yeah.
You know, I'm a private, I'm the guy driving the car. There's directors and assistant directors and coordinators. You know, there's so many layers to the hierarchy before you get to the stunt guy, who's the private. You just do what you're told. That movie, they were like, yeah, well, what could we do here to make the story work? And that was super fun. And so that's, I can see why the coordinators really like their job, you know, like a guy like Robert Nagel or Jeremy Fry, they have to get in there and take the language of the script and the director's vibe mm-hmm. that he wants to get, and then apply it to reality in these cars with these tires on this day. And that's a challenge sometimes.
I imagine it could be, you know, the guys writing the movie, they're going to write it. They don't really care if it's possible or not, because someone's going to figure it out. It's not their problem. Right. And if you think about the CGI stuff, which is interesting. I was working with some friends on a short video with the video. I think we could tell it now. Basically, the video is for Hennessy's new supercar that they're working on, and I believe the car was was supposed to be unveiled, or a video was supposed to come out. The car wasn't available to run yet. So we went and found something similar size and shape, wheelbase and whatever. We ended up with a McLaren 720S because I'm like, if I'm going to be driving this thing all day, it might as well be fun, right? We took it out to the canyons out here, and we put markers all over the car that the CGI guys can use. And we just filmed us driving this thing up and down through the canyons, just blasting through, close off the roads. It wasn't meant to be stunt driving, just more of the precision driving, getting some effects to it. And then we brought that back and completely CGI'd out the 720S, put the Hennessy car in there, and to do a 2-3-4 minute video. And the CGI is, I don't know, $30,000.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of the budget just to take. By the way, the McLaren looked awesome. It just had stickers all over it. And it was so much fun to drive. Yeah. We shot a few runs with the drones and stuff without the stickers on the McLaren. But most of it was, it's like a little like 3-inch by 3-inch square piece of paper with like a target on it.
A reference. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there's 100 of these stuck all over the car. So you could, you know, when you're doing the software, you can get the car out. And believe me, it costs a lot less money. Cars driving by. It costs a lot less money to CGI out the car and put another car in than it would be to do the trees in the background, because there's hundreds of trees blowing by at 90 miles an hour. And that's actually the expensive part.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. No. That they do commercials with like that, actually. You know, where they'll use a dot car, and you know, just car with covered in dots. If maybe a prototype isn't available, just like that. I love, by the way, what Hennessy's doing. That he, you know, he's really turned his business into something cool, where he's not just adding power to stuff, but coming up with his own kind of cars. It's amazing. But yeah, that's there are a lot of cars that are incredibly difficult to work with. You know, sometimes you'll do a commercial, let's just say a Volkswagen, since I do a lot of commercials for Volkswagen.
Yeah.
And maybe creative will want the Passat. They'll show a video of like some
commercial where a car's drifting around the edge of like a harbor or something. They'll be like, where do we'd like this? And you know, you got a front wheel drive car that you can barely turn the stability control off, much less the ABS, and doesn't have a handbrake anymore. They have push button brakes. So, for commercials, there's a lot of drivers that would love if they would just go to whatever the simple old school car is that has a mean differential, a bunch of power, you know, and a good handbrake, and then just stick some dots on the thing. And then, you know, we'll call it a day, and you'll have all your cars doing crazy stuff whenever Creative wants that. But yeah, it's that's happening. I'll be honest. I spent 2 months in Tokyo Drift. We worked out of LA, but we had to drive a van up and down this these dams where we shot the mountain scene, and so there's a lot of van riding. And I made sure I sat next to the CGI guys, and these were the same guys that did Fast and the Furious 2.
Yeah,
and that one to me, in a lot of ways, it looked like a cartoon in a lot of ways.
It did, yeah.
And I preached to them using every bit that I remembered from my biology degree about the physiology and the human condition, and how we're not good at, you know, we don't have claws, we don't have very good vision or smell, but we can see motion really well. And I think it's a way that we pick our parents out in a crowd, and we can tell the difference between the way a man and a woman walks just by the slightest thing. And it's the reason you've never seen good CGI hair move in the wind on a person. And so we can see motion, and we can see shades of color. Those are like our great things besides having, you know, self-awareness, but and opposable thumbs. But there's if you have that motion thing, you can tell when a car is sliding, even the $30,000 CGI or more, you can tell it hits a bump and it's like, ooh, wait a minute. Something's a little bit weird about that. Something didn't, and we can smell a rat in that stuff so well. And I convinced these guys they needed to just put dots on the ground. If there was going to be a cliff there, let us drive to the dots or whatever, but let the cars actually do the sliding. And I think it changed some of it. I may have moved the ship 1%, but it was enough to be satisfying that they would at least let us slide the cars around. And the second thing on that movie, not to get too much into Tokyo Drift, was that Reese Millen convinced Dennis McCarthy, who's responsible for all the cars in Fast and Furious and Hobbs and Shaw, to, instead of building 9 of like the DKZs, the Gray Z, to build like 5 of them and make 2 of them really good. And, you know, good turbo. We got APR turbo kits out of Australia, good handbrakes, good differential suspension.
Yeah.
And then you'd have 2 good ones and then 3 crashers.
Okay. And
instead of having 3 junky ones, or instead of having 9 junky ones, like was the
original. Right. Just budget wise, you're saying spend the money on 2 good ones because we can do more with that than, you know, 6 other ones that we give it a shot and we wreck it and we throw it away and we move to the next one.
Right. And then just save the 2 good ones. You know, if it was a crash, it's like, we'll pull out a crash car. If it's just drifting through the city streets, you want the most power, the best handbrake, best differential you can get. And then you could make the shots way cooler that way too. But in movies now, I mean, Need for Speed had some of the best cars. I actually bought 2 cars from the movie and registered them and drove them on the street. And they were amazing. There were 67 Camaros that had been completely rebuilt like a brand new car, throttle by wire, LS3s, all that kind of stuff.
Nice. Underneath.
But that's totally different than it was, you know, in the Bullet days or, you know, Vanishing Point or whatever. Those days, those were old school, take a shot of whiskey and go do the stunt. And you know, we're really spoiled in movies now with some of them where they give you just the tools that can do the job that much better.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up, and I appreciate all the time you've given us, what's in Tanner Faust's garage? What's in the car collection these days? Of course you got your 912. You're never going to give that up, right?
I love the fact that you and other people know that. Yeah, that is so cool.
There's a great story behind it. I remember from back in the day. You brought the car over to our studio, and I wish I had like something like that in my life where I'm like, oh, it's dad's car, grandpa's car, like just something to go, you know, I got nothing, right? Such a good story. So all the other cars that come and go in our lives, you have the one, but which is great. So what else is in the lineup there?
On a daily driver style type thing, I have a GT3, a 991 GT3.
Okay.
And I have a Golf R, and I'm a spokesperson for Golf R, and it's been, Odinger has souped it up a bit, and it's a pretty trick little Golf R, and there's a new Golf R coming out. You know, the Golf 8 is coming out pretty soon. So I'm looking forward to that. Then I've got the car I'm in right now is an Atlas, which is like the Volkswagens. It's a three rows of seats SUV, full on deal.
Yeah.
I still have a Raptor from the those Ford racing days.
Yeah, sure.
But then I've got some drift cars. You know, like that Scion. I don't know if you ever saw that Scion with the NASCAR motor in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have that. I've got that 900 horsepower Passat, an RWB Beetle. I think it might be the only one in existence, but it's a.
That's right, the RWB Beetle. I've seen it, pictures of it, not in person, but. Boy, Rutt couldn't be any more jealous of that car, huh?
believe me, now that he has an RWB Porsche, you know, yeah. He's constantly one-upping me on that, which is totally fine. I don't have, you know, I've never been like Rutt or maybe like you, really skilled at collecting cars. I never, it just wasn't, like I drove them and I respected the engineering behind them and all the kind of nerdy stuff. But, you know, like when my Honda Civic, when I was kind of done with that and I got something that was a little bit faster, I wanted that garage space back. And
yeah.
So I've sold everything. I haven't kept stuff like Rutt has.
Well, in California, garage space is one of the most exotic commodities we can try to go after. And everybody's trying to get garage space. And I think Adam has like four buildings now trying to scavenge.
Come check it out.
We're building out a new one right now. We're going to move some of the cars there. You know, but also when that happens, how do you make the money? So there's a building that's a studio and there's a building that's now a production company. And then, you know, and then the building we're in needs to be rented out for more production stuff. So where do the cars go? So we got to go find another building. But you, assuming you still got your cool house, has the lift in it, right? With the raise up the car into the house, yeah, little like Adam's old place.
The garage space is a hot item, but when the real estate is expensive, yeah, you have to get creative. And yeah. So Benpack hooked me up with a lift. I know you guys have some Benpack lifts there.
Yeah, we do.
And they hooked me up with a lift, and they have one lift that's really tall. So it's, I think, a bit more than 12 feet or something. It'll take the car up. And so it goes up into the second floor of the house. And it was an idea that is a crude version of an idea inspired by Adam's old house.
Yeah, his
when
late Hollywood
house.
When
he and I did a Top Gear pilot, I went to his house a couple times and he was working on that thing. And I think he put a mirror in it. It was a garage floor. His was way cooler, way less permittable, but it was way cooler. And it was like the garage floor would lift up into the office. And so the car was like actually in the house. Mine's in like a glass section of the garage.
Yeah, Adam's car. It was in the movie Road Hard, and there was a couple of articles about it. But he wanted the car to lift up through the floor into his office above the garage.
Yes.
But then he wanted the floor to close in underneath it. And the lift, he wanted it to go down and disappear completely. So he had to use a single post flush mount hydraulic lift. So in his garage, you didn't even notice anything. And in the ceiling above it would have to open and the car would push through. And it actually was a lot more work than it looks like. It took a long time to get the car up there because it couldn't lift high enough and we had to make a stand for it.
Well, then did you have to double check that the hooks? I mean, because then you got this concrete floor that's just got to rest on something, right?
Yeah. So there was metal beams all underneath, and the metal beams, that part of it was fine. It was getting the lift high enough. Okay. So that you guys that follow my social media, you can see I post pictures all the time of the garage, and you can see the Camel GT pace car, the Datsun pace car, is sitting up on like a podium that's like 2 feet high. That was the podium that a car would sit on in Adam's garage when he would raise the car into his office. So the car would sit on that and it would lift the entire podium and the car into the office. So that it would sit up on a platform. And the four TVs that you see in the middle of our shop were above the car in his house. So instead of like four TVs, like in a, like a sports place or above a pool table, it was above the car. So anyway, cool stuff. Tanner, thank you so much for the time. What's next for you? Where can we see you? Are you racing? Are you filming? Or
I'm home. I mean, I'm home.
That's, you're locked down like everybody.
That's what I'm doing. I'm just trying to do my part to minimize all this stuff. And then once we get back in the swing of things, Nitro World Games is towards the end of the year. We have plans for Baja 1000, which is towards the end of the year. So hopefully with those events still are on, they're all the way back into the September to November range. And then I'm traveling around for this Golf 8 launch. Later in the summer, fall also. So we'll see if all that stuff is still on, but certainly having fun with the podcast. We're probably going to do it in isolation this next time, the next three episodes with Speedy, Beardy, and the Mole.
Yeah.
But I just want to thank you very much for having me on, and it was great to see you.
Thank you so much, you guys. Of course, you find everything at TannerFaust.com. You can buy his swag and reach out to him on his social media. And guys, check out this video, Quantum Drift 2. It's on YouTube. It's on Tanner's channel. I'm sure it's going to be all over his social media. It's all over the place. So it's fun, and it's got a lot of great 80s references that only he and I will get. But Tanner, thank you so much. And be safe. Enjoy your flying. Enjoy your plane. And we'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Have a great day.
Thanks.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening, and a huge thanks to Tanner Faust sticking with us for the entire episode. What a trooper, man. What a great dude. One more time, we're going to remind you about our friends at Geico. You own your home, you rent your home, either way, I know it can be a lot of work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Visit geico.com, and you could be saving money on your home and renter's insurance, and you can bundle it along with your auto policy. That's a good thing because you already have so much to do around the home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.